for 2 weeks in a row here at our Sunday night worship services in Orb, we've been talking about discipleship, about what it means to be a genuine, true follower of Jesus. And we've looked at two stories where Jesus was interacting with disciples in the last 2 weeks. And in each one of those, I hoped that what became clear was that being a disciple takes courage, it takes bravery, it calls for risks. A person needs to be bold and determined and selfless to actually follow after Jesus. I hope you saw that over the last 2 weeks. This past week, I began to think, wouldn't it be good if tonight I could set before the group and myself a picture of a person who decided to actually follow after Jesus and was very courageous and very bold? I started to think through in my mind who might show us that. And then it occurred to me it would also be good if I could show somebody who wasn't courageous and wasn't bold and didn't follow Jesus. If I could put those two people up before us tonight and we could look at them and I could tell you to be like the one and not the other. But then this is what occurred to me. There is a man, and it is Joseph of Arimathea, in whom we see both of these things almost at the same time. Fear and the refusal to follow Jesus, but then something happens that makes him choose to be a risky follower of this man Jesus. And so tonight, we're going to look at a very short scene in which this transformation takes place in hopes of seeing what it is that changes him so that we too might be changed. So what I'd like you to do is to grab a Bible and find, if you would, the book of John and the 19th chapter. And it's on page 882 of these black Bibles. And what I'll do is very simply, we'll look at one verse. Because I want this to be simple. One verse. And it's chapter 19, and it's verse 38 of that chapter. And I'm going to read it now. Go ahead and follow along if you would. Here's what verse 38 says. After these things, Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, though a secret one because of his fear of the Jews, asked Pilate to let him take away the body of Jesus. Pilate gave him permission, so he came and removed his body. All right. I want to look at this one verse with you in three parts. First, Joseph of Arimathea. What do we know about this man? Well, first, we know that he was of Arimathea, which means he came from a small village which was north and west of Jerusalem in the foothills of Judea, called in Hebrew, anyone want to guess? Arimathea. And what Arimathea means in Hebrew is Hicksville. Arimathea was a small woodland village where nobody important came from. It was a tiny little woodland settlement that meant nothing in the first century. And this man, Joseph, some point in his life, made his way from this small nobody town into Jerusalem where he took up residence. We know something else about this man. When he began to live in Jerusalem, it wasn't long before he became rich. We know this because we hear at one point that he owned a plot of land outside of the city of Jerusalem on which there was a tomb for burial. Now, in those days, commoners were buried in something called an ossuary. Have you ever heard of that? An ossuary was a stone box that they crammed your bones into and then put with a bunch of other boxes. Okay, this is how they buried commoners, in ossuaries. This man, Joseph of Arimathea, apparently owned real estate right outside of Jerusalem on which there was a rock-hewn tomb. So somehow, he went from living in this two-bit nowhere town to being a city man of considerable wealth. That's another thing we know about him. There's a third thing that we know. At some point, he went from being this nobody to becoming a member on something called the Sanhedrin. Has anyone here ever heard of that, the Sanhedrin? The Sanhedrin was a council of 71 members of prominent men in Jerusalem. It was led by the high priest, who was appointed by the Roman prefect at the time, which was Pontius Pilate. And that high priest, who was a very powerful man, gathered up 70 of his friends, associates, who were people of wealth, of influence, and of power, or who might have been scribes, which means they were professionals in the law, and they knew the law inside and out. And this group of 71 people was called the Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin's tasks were simple. They were in charge of judging cases in which somebody was accused of committing a crime against the Jewish law. If that happened, if there was a crime that was committed that was to be punishable by the Jewish law, the Sanhedrin would meet and make a judgment about what should happen to the criminal. Joseph of Arimathea was a prominent member of this council, a prominent member of the Sanhedrin. Okay, he was well respected, he was rich, he must have been intelligent and highly accomplished, and he would sat on the Sanhedrin. And this is why the Sanhedrin matters. In all four of the Gospels, the crucial event that all of them narrate is the trial at which Jesus was arrested, accused falsely, all of them make it clear, and then sentenced to death. And as all four Gospels recount, he ends on the cross. The Sanhedrin was the group that sat in judgment over Jesus when this happened. Which means that Joseph of Arimathea was a part of the trial that you can read about in the Gospels. Now, it doesn't matter whether you believe in Jesus or believe in God, whether you're an atheist or a devout Christian, whoever you are, if you read through the Gospels, when you get to the point where that trial happens, do you know what you'll all agree on? There's no justice here. This trial against this man, Jesus, is clearly twisted. They're not following the rules of righteousness, of justice. Not only did they break the rules that any common person could see, but if you pay attention to the trial, they even break their own rules when they sentence Jesus to death. And Joseph of Arimathea was a part of that group. Now, there's one last thing about Joseph that we need to know. Larissa spoiled this. That's all right. It was awesome. Joseph of Arimathea did not agree with the decision of that council, which was to sentence Jesus to death. We read about that directly in the Gospel of Luke. It says very plainly, Joseph of Arimathea, a prominent member of the council, did not agree with their plans of actions. It says that very clearly. But do you know what we do not read a single word about? Any resistance on his part to what they planned to do. We read that he didn't think what they were doing was right, but we never read that he stood up against that council. We never read that he argued with them, that he raised his voice and said, I don't think we should do this, that he did anything at all to stop the proceedings from this twisted, wrong juridical process to the death of this man on the cross. Joseph of Arimathea didn't do anything to stop it, even though he thought it was wrong. Now, I want you to use your imagination for a moment. Can you picture him that night in the courtyard of the high priest? All of his friends and cohorts are around as Jesus is being sentenced. And in his mind and in his heart is this thought that this is not right. What they're doing to this man is not just. No, I don't think he should go to the cross. And then he decides not to say anything at all. He chooses to remain silent and not open his mouth, even though he doesn't agree with what's going on. You see that picture? I have to say that I believe that more often than any of us would like to admit, that is a picture of what our discipleship is like. Now, it is true. When we are in a situation where we should speak up and we choose to remain silent instead. It is equally true in a situation where we should remain silent and we speak up instead. Have you ever done that? It is true when we get ourselves involved in things that we should not get ourselves involved in and we know it. And it's equally true when we choose not to get ourselves involved in things that we know we should get involved in. Are you following me? The fact is, like Joseph of Arimathea, many of us try to live lives as secret followers of Jesus. I think John knew about this scene that Luke paints, and that's why he tells us that Joseph of Arimathea was a follower of Jesus, a disciple of Jesus, but in secret. And many of us try to do that, but the fact is, and this is a plain and simple fact, it is not possible to follow Jesus in secret. Because either you follow him publicly so that other people see that you are following him, or you're not actually following him. Now, You might expect here for me to give you a commercial for purchasing Christian t-shirts or bumper stickers. Okay? I remember when I was in high school that I was convinced that they will know we are Christians by our t-shirts. But that... Yeah, okay, right. Obviously, it's more than that. To be a genuine follower of Jesus, this is what it means. It means to live in such a way in front of other people that no matter what happens because you're choosing to live like that, they will see that Jesus Christ is your Lord. That the way you live will demonstrate to others that He is the one who you follow. Not the things you say or the shirts you wear, but the things that you actually do with your life. Did you hear what John said about why Joseph was a follower in secret? Did you pick that up? It was because he was afraid of the Jews. What would happen if Joseph, at that trial, decided to stand up and say, actually, I have to be honest, I follow this guy, and what you're doing is wrong. I'll tell you what would have happened. First, he would have lost his position on the Sanhedrin, which would have meant that the 70 closest business associates that he had would have gone from being his allies to being his enemies. He would have made all of his friends into his enemies. He would have lost his position on the Sanhedrin. He would have lost with it all the influence and power and wealth that went with having these friends. He would have lost his social networks. He would have lost his economic prowess. In short, if he had stood up to follow Jesus, he would have lost everything. And so he chose not to. Does it sound hopeless? I have to tell you this. I am utterly confident that for every one of us who chooses, and I include myself in this batch, to follow Jesus in secret, there is hope that we could go from being the cowardly, self-centered, secret disciples that we make of ourselves into someone who's brave and bold and follows clearly. And this is why I say that. It's because of what happens in this story with Joseph. So now let's look at the second part of verse 38 and see why I say that. The first part was Joseph of Arimathea, who was a disciple of Jesus, though a secret one because of his fear of the Jews. Here's the second part. He asked Pilate to let him take away the body of Jesus. Pilate gave him permission, so he came and removed his body. Now I want you to, you're going to have to follow me here. I have to share some facts with you. Okay, picture this. I didn't say this at the start, but this scene that I've read, this verse 38, takes place right after Jesus was on the cross and he died. The Sanhedrin, this group of religious officials who had put him there, they were around the cross with everybody else, and they watched the man that they had sentenced to death die, and Joseph of Arimathea was among them. Now, there's a few details that I have to share so this makes sense. The timing of this event was significant. It was right on the eve of the Passover. What that means is there were going to be enormous numbers of religious pilgrims who were in Jerusalem for this religious festival, for the Passover, who would have seen this man die on the cross. Does anybody know what Jewish people thought of the death on the cross? Was that a pleasant thing? No, it was terribly horrendous for them. And they didn't just use it against criminals because they wanted to punish them. They knew that it was heinous and an offense to God. And because dying on a cross was such an offensive thing, this is important, every religious Jew would have known that before sunset, on the eve of Passover, on the eve of the Sabbath, you had to get that body off the cross. Because it would be an offense to God to have a person dead on a cross when night falls. It was such a heinous and disgusting thing. The holiness of the Sabbath and the holiness of the day of Passover would have been spoiled by the existence of that body there on the cross. So a good, pious Jew would have known, after that guy dies, we better get his body off the cross. So, you got me so far? You with me? So, for Joseph of Arimathea to come to Pilate at that point and say, I'd like to take the body of Jesus off the cross, that would not have been a big deal. It simply means that he is very observant of the Jewish law that you don't leave a body on the cross overnight. Now, this is where the big deal comes in. What was expected of the body that was taken off the cross when it was a criminal was very plain for the Jews. This is what was supposed to happen to that body. It was to be taken down from the cross and then dragged outside of the city gates, outside of the city walls, and brought to this valley that was on the northwest corner of Jerusalem. And in this valley where the body was supposed to be brought, this was where they dumped their garbage, It's where they burned their garbage, and it's where they brought their sewage. Because when a criminal who was condemned to die on the cross, when his body finally expired, all the pious Jews knew that what you did is you gave it the burial of an animal or a pile of garbage, or you treated it like refuse. And so that's what all the members of the Sanhedrin would have expected to see one of their kind, Joseph of Arimathea, do. Take this body down and throw the corpse on the garbage pile like the animal Jesus was. But I want you to look now. I'm sorry, I'm going to sneak in more than one verse tonight. I want you to look at verse 39 to see what happens. Nicodemus, who had at first come to Jesus by night. Incidentally, as Larissa shared earlier, Nicodemus was another man who was afraid to follow Jesus because he feared the consequences. But he suddenly shows up again. This is the second time we see him in the Gospel of John. He arrives on the scene. Look what he does. He came bringing a mixture of myrrh and aloes. Myrrh and aloes are the embalming ingredients that are used when a corpse is to be treated with respect, when it's to be cared for in the way that a good, righteous death would, man would have been cared for. But look what it says here. He came with a mixture of myrrh and aloes, weighing about 100 pounds. Now, this might not ring like this in our ears, but that amount of myrrh and aloes would have been tremendously expensive and outrageously extravagant. That's way more than would be needed for an ordinary burial, and that's meant to indicate one thing: that there's something very unique and special about what Nicodemus and his friend Joseph of Arimathea are doing with this particular body. Let's read on. It says, they took the body of Jesus and wrapped it with the spices in linen cloths, according to the burial customs of the Jews. Now, there was a garden in the place where he was crucified, and in the garden there was a new tomb in which no one had ever been laid. And so because it was the Jewish day of preparation and the tomb was nearby, they laid Jesus there. Now did you hear what Joseph of Arimathea did at this point? He did not take the body down and throw it away like everyone would have expected him to do as a good member of the Sanhedrin. He did exactly the opposite. He took the body down and he treated the body of Jesus as if it were the body of the king. Because the burial that is described there is a royal burial. Now, I want you to be clear about what this act says. It says a lot more than any words Joseph could have said. What this act said of Joseph's, right in the face of all of the people on the Sanhedrin, is simply this: Jesus Christ, this man who you condemned to die, is my king. I choose to follow him. Even though with you I put him to death, he is my Lord, and I will respect his dead body as such, and I will do that no matter what you do to me. I don't care what happens, because I show this act of devotion. I am showing everyone, right in the face of all of the resistance that I will get, that this man is my Lord, and I will treat him as such. In this act, Joseph of Arimathea goes from what he was previously, which was a coward who was too afraid and not determined enough and too selfish to stand up for Jesus, to the person who is confident, courageous, bold, determined, and who stands up and declares himself a true disciple of Jesus, not with his words only, but with his actions. Now, the text doesn't tell us what happens to him after this, and I think it doesn't tell us because we don't need to read it. We know. I'm sure the man lost everything. But something took place that made him into this courageous disciple. Something happened that changed him from this coward into this brave, courageous man. What was it? Why did he do this? Now, I'll tell you why I think this is an important question to ask. It's an important question to ask because if we could see what it was that took place that changed him from this frightened secret disciple into someone who was so willing to be brave for Jesus, if we could see that, then you and I, all of us, we could stand a chance at becoming the courageous disciples that we know we were meant to be. Does anyone here feel that they have, quite enough courage? That I'm
quite happy with the degree to which I'm following Christ? Or are there some of us who see that we need to be drawn further into discipleship? That we have to become people who are more determined in our decisions to follow Christ and become men and women of action, not just thoughts about Jesus? Is there anyone here who's just quite content with their discipleship? Or do you feel like I do, the need to step out of the places where we hide who we are as Jesus followers and become brave to follow Him? There's something that happened that did this to Joseph. It's the third part of verse 38. And in an ironic twist, it's the first words of verse 38. So I'm trying to keep you on your toes, that's all. Look at the first three words of verse 38. And this is our clue. See what they say there? After these things... Okay, what that means is very simple. It means that there were some things that came before what Joseph did that made him do this brave thing. There were some things. Some things. What were these things that happened? Here you go. You ready for this? The secret disciple is someone who lacks determination. You ever seen a Christian, or maybe you've ever been this Christian, who makes a decision to do something one day and you're so excited about your plans, and then a week goes by and the plans are gone? You set a goal for yourself because it's New Year's, or because it's Friday, or because it's 3:15, or you're forever setting decisions and making choices about how you're going to be a better follower, and then you set out to do it, but in the end, it comes to nothing. Has anyone ever done that or seen somebody who does that? That's because it's so easy to lack determination as a follower of Jesus. And do you know what Joseph of Arimathea saw when he looked at Jesus before this little story? Do you know what he saw when he looked at him? He saw a man who was full of determination. He saw a man who set a goal for himself and had a plan and knew where he was going, and even though he had a million opportunities to turn away from his path, even though Jesus had every chance to bail on his mission, even though Jesus' best friends were telling him, don't do this, don't go that way, come away from the cross, no, don't do that, Joseph of Arimathea saw a man, even while he was in the trial, this false trial, still walked with a determination right toward the place he wanted to go, the cross. And I imagine that was awfully inspiring to see such determination. But you know, I think it takes more than just being inspired to do this courageous thing that Joseph of Arimathea did, which amounts to standing up in front of everyone that cares about you and doing something that makes them all turn away from you. That's what would have happened to Joseph. It had to be more than just inspiration. What else happened? What was another thing that happened before this story? Okay, so there was this determination he saw in Jesus. What else does a serious disciple need, aside from determination? You heard Larissa talk about it, courage. Courage. How many times have you yourself been in a situation where you kept your mouth quiet and afterward you were sure that you should have spoken up, and you know that the reason was you lacked courage? Or vice versa, you said something that was quite uncourageous. I myself have done this week even. How courageous Joseph of Arimathea must have thought Jesus was. Here's a man, Jesus, whose path hasn't been rejected by his friends, robbed of every bit of security that could possibly be held onto by a man, as he's whipped and beaten by this council, as he's robbed of his dignity, stripped down, a crown of thorns is pressed upon his head. Can you imagine the courage that Joseph of Arimathea saw as Jesus walked up the path carrying his grief up to that hill on that cross that he was nailed to? Can you imagine the courage that Joseph of Arimathea witnessed as this good man, Jesus Christ, went to the cross there to die? If you saw that with your own eyes, don't you think you would be inspired? I still don't think that was enough. How many times, let me ask you this, how many times have you been really inspired, then decided to make a change, and as soon as the inspiration leaves, and there's another emotion that's stronger than the inspiration, let's say your hunger for a pizza, or your excitement at the score of the big game. Does anybody know the score of the game right now, by the way? Some of you are Giants fans and you're here instead. It's quite good. It's very disciple-like of you. Yeah, I think that Joseph... But after these things, I think the things that Joseph of Arimathea saw were the determination of this man, and all of us could use a good sight of determination. I think he saw the courage of this man. All of us could use some courage. But there's one other thing that I think he saw that did more than inspire him.
I want you to try to see Jesus on the cross through Joseph's eyes with me for a moment. As you're standing there with your colleagues on the Sanhedrin, with whom you didn't agree but said nothing, your eyes turn away from them and you see there this man who you've been trying to follow in secret. And you see the pain that he's currently experiencing. Maybe you thought, because of what you knew of his power, that he'd never end up there. But there he is. And as you see him writhing in pain on the cross, with still so much courage and so much resolve, this is the thought that suddenly occurs to you. Because I believe this occurred to Joseph as he was there. The thought comes, that man is there in part because of me. That good man is dying there because I was unwilling to stand up and say anything. My silence has in part contributed to his current condition. My choice not to say anything because I didn't want to lose what I wanted to hold on to has led to this man having to let go of everything he had. I believe that that thought occurred to Joseph. And then with that thought, I believe, came a feeling. And it's the feeling of guilt and shame. Because if Joseph was a good and righteous man, as we read he was in fact, there's no question that when he saw that his actions had led this man to the cross, he couldn't help but feel guilty and feel full of shame. And so there he is, knowing that this man's fate was his responsibility because he wasn't courageous enough to speak up, and feeling full of guilt and shame, and he looks away from himself for a moment and looks back at Jesus, and do you know what he sees Jesus do? He sees Jesus' eyes scan the crowd. He notices that Jesus' eyes even meet his. And Joseph of Arimathea knows deep in his heart that Jesus is fully aware that he didn't choose to do anything to stop where Jesus was. And then Jesus looks away from Joseph and turns his eyes toward heaven. And he hears this man say, Father, forgive these people because they don't know what they're doing. Joseph heard the good man who was dying because of him say something, listen now, that made him realize that Jesus wasn't just dying because of him, but Jesus was dying for him. Now, I don't believe that it would have come in the same words that Paul uses in Romans 5, but this is what was happening, which Joseph of Arimathea was seeing there on the cross. This is what was happening. God shows his love for us in that while we were yet weak, weak means not brave enough to stand up and do the right thing. Weak means lacking the determination to follow through on the choices we make so that we can finally become real disciples. Weak means choosing to be a secret disciple so that we don't lose the things we want to cling to. Weak means Joseph of Arimathea. In Romans 5 it says, while we were still weak, God shows his love for us. He shows his love for us in that while we made of ourselves his enemies, Paul stops and says, you know, rarely will anyone die for a righteous man. But perhaps for a righteous person, someone might dare to die. But God shows his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for the ungodly. Now, I am confident that Joseph of Arimathea was standing there in his guilt and shame, and what he saw was that this good man was dying for him. And he was dying for him because Jesus' love is unconquerable. And the force of that realization in Joseph, do you know what it did to everything that made him want to resist following Jesus? It obliterated it. It destroyed every hesitance in him. It destroyed every desire to cling to the worthless idols that he wanted so badly to get glory from. He was willing to let go of everything when he saw the love that Jesus Christ had for him. And then he was willing to stand up and say with his actions, this man is my Lord and I follow him without reservation. Two things. Just two things.
if any one of us would become the true, genuine disciple that all of us were meant to be,
we only need to look at one place. And that is the place where God shows us what He has done for us in Jesus Christ.
The place where He shows us just how much He loves us.
Because you and I, all of us, are just as responsible for Jesus' death as Joseph of Arimathea and as the Sanhedrin. And just like each one of them, Jesus looks at us and says, Father, forgive them, because He loves us.
If you want to go from being a secret disciple to being a courageous one,
look long and hard at what God did for you on the cross in Jesus Christ. That's number one. Number two, if any one of you would like to see somebody that you know, a friend, a family member, someone that you work with in the young adult ministry or the high school group or in the adult group, if any one of us would like to see a person come also to follow Jesus, don't try, first of all, to argue them into His good graces. Don't get out your hardest covered Bible and smash them in the skull with it. Don't go on forever buying some clever book about how to argue them into belief. It doesn't work like that.
Don't try to paint pictures about all the good things that they'll get when they finally follow Him, because you'll be lying to them. They might lose everything for following Him. If you ever, and this is, I say this at the end because this church is organized for the sake of trying to help people follow Him.
All we need to do is to show them as clearly as possible the love of this man whose love is stronger than their resistance, than their disbelief, than all of their enmity and hatred, their pride and arrogance, their fear, than everything. His love conquers it all. It will destroy it. And you, your call as a person who is meant to help people come to know Him is simply to reflect His love in the world around you. That's what your task is. That's what all of our tasks is. And my friends, that is a joyful thing to do. That's a thing, that's a task that's worth letting everything go up to pursue. To share the love of God with those who don't know it.
I want to close tonight in prayer. To thank God for what He did for all of us, for Joseph and for all of us and for the world. And then to ask for His good grace to be able to show with our lives the reality of His love. Let's pray.